Bill Cosby made his first major court appearance in Montgomery County today. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Cosby sat quietly while lawyers from both sides debated whether a statement by former District Attorney Bruce Castor bound him from ever being prosecuted in an alleged 2004 sexual assault. Castor said he decided not to charge Cosby in a decade-old sexual assault case, though he believes the entertainer inappropriately touched his accuser, but didn't think he could overcome the lack of physical evidence. Cosby's lawyers want the judge to dismiss the felony case against Cosby. Judge Stephen O'Neill announced he'd make a decision on the matter tomorrow. Shaka Fatah Jr.'s 5-year-long prison term starts today. A federal judge came down hard on the congressman's son for lying to banks, the IRS, and the Philadelphia School District. WHYY's Bobby Allen was in court for the sentencing today.
Here are some of the last words Chip Fatah told Judge Harvey Bartle before federal authorities cuffed him and took him into custody.
I didn't know that anything I did was a violation of the law, and that's it. I'm sorry.
Authorities say he lied to get bank loans, then used that money to pay down debts, including those he owed to casinos. He falsified salaries and other paperwork as a consultant to the Philadelphia School District to enrich himself.
I've lost friends. I've lost, money, and my reputation.
Judge Harvey Bartle's order that Fatah serve 5 years, then 5 years of supervised release, was quite near the maximum punishment.
You cannot claim hardship or a disadvantaged upbringing. You cannot claim the pressures of the street or just getting in with the wrong crowd.
Bartle also ordered Fatah pay $1.1 million to a number of banks and others the 33-year-old Fatah stole from.
You made a plethora of bad choices of your own free will and allowed greed and hardness of heart to govern your actions.
After the sentencing, U.S. Attorney Paul Gray, who is also prosecuting Congressman Fatah, said the son got what he deserved.
The jury's verdict has done away with the charade that Mr. Fatah was a legitimate businessman.
Congressman Fatah says the family will persevere.
I am a person of great faith, and our family is stronger than any of the forces that are arrayed against us. And there will be a different day, and there will be a different result.
Chip Fatah has said that he plans to appeal the conviction. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
President Barack Obama last month announced that juveniles will no longer be held in solitary confinement in federal prisons. And there's wide bipartisan support to look anew at the criminal justice system, including revisiting mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines and conditions of confinement. Meanwhile, however, a practice known as civil commitment ensures that some sex offenders who committed their crimes as juveniles can be detained involuntarily and indefinitely. Reporters George Steptoe and Antoine Gaudet focused on a case in New Jersey in their article for the Marshall Project. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization focusing on the American criminal justice system. George, Antoine, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Hi, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting us.
Your story takes us through the case of specifically John Sanchez in New Jersey. Tell us about his plight.
So John Sanchez is a kid from New Jersey who grew up in a low-income family in the 90s. When he was 12 and 13 years old, he committed a series of sex offenses. He landed in a juvenile facility. He was released and he was picked up again on his 18th birthday and sent to the special treatment unit.
What was the pretext for bringing him back to this treatment facility at age 18?
In New Jersey, the legal threshold that you have to meet is you have to be determined by state psychologists to be highly likely to reoffend sexually unless involuntarily detained for intensive therapy to essentially kind of cure you of your deviant sexual arousal.
To be clear, it wasn't because he violated some aspect of his parole.
No, absolutely not. No, he'd actually only been released for 2 days. He wasn't charged with any new crime. But he's still there now, and that was 5 years ago, and he's now 23.
So regarding the legal definition of a sexually violent predator, does that vary greatly from state to state, or is there general consensus?
So there is state-to-state variation regarding the exact language of the definition of a sexually violent predator. But generally, it remains pretty much the same, and it's a person who has been convicted who are charged with a sexually violent offense and who suffers from a mental abnormality or from a personality disorder that state hired psychiatrists deem make that person likely to reoffend, to engage again in acts of sexual violence, would he be released. But in some states, such as New Jersey, you don't need to be convicted of a sex offense. You can only have been charged with a sex offense.
Civil commitment means in part that it's open-ended when the individual is eligible for release.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's essentially indefinite. None of the people in the STU have got any real idea of when they would be released. Some people that we spoke to said that through this kind of legal loophole, certain states are actually handing out life sentences to juveniles under the auspices of civil commitment.
How prolific is the practice in New Jersey?
At the moment, there's around 500 people in the special treatment unit in Avenel, and about 10% of those are waiting for their initial commitment hearing, so i.e. to determine whether they're going to be staying or not. And since the program's inception in 1999, 579 people have ever been committed. Only around 15% of those have been discharged to the community after treatment. More than half have been there for 10 years or longer, and at least 41 have died while civilly committed in Avenel.
What are some of the central arguments by advocates of the current system?
The idea is that we're protecting the public from the very worst sex offenders. And depending on who you speak to, some advocates have absolute confidence in the ability of state psychiatrists to identify those who are highly likely to reoffend sexually. But a lot of the leading psychologists that we've spoken to, and certainly in the areas of juvenile delinquency, would say that it's actually extremely difficult to identify the handful of young sex offenders who would be likely to go on to reoffend. And not only that, that they would say that no matter how heinous their past conduct, we as a society owe them a positive developmental experience. And it's that positive developmental experience, forging friendships, getting a job, completing your higher education, living with your family. It's exactly those kind of components that would actually would be more effective in diminishing someone's likelihood of sexually reoffending.
George, Antoine, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
George Steptoe and Antoine Gaudet focused on this case in New Jersey in their article for the Marshall Project, a nonprofit news organization focusing on the American criminal justice system. And you can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. Turning to this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf says he'll ask the Republican-controlled legislature for an additional $200 million for public schools next year, even as he continues to fight for more money in this year's budget. Wolf made the announcement today, 1 week before delivering next year's budget proposal to lawmakers. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's push to build protective sand dunes along the coastline damaged by Superstorm Sandy is hitting close to home. The state wants to seize part of a beach behind his brother's summer house in Point Pleasant Beach. Todd Christie says he's fine with the move and supports the dunes, even though his homeowners association, which owns the beach, does not. You're listening to Newsworks tonight on WHYY. This evening's forecast, increasingly cloudy skies, low overnight around 40 degrees. Tomorrow, rain, heavy at times, Wednesday's high all the way to 63 degrees. And then a spate of sunny days Thursday, right through the weekend. Thursday's high 50 degrees, up to 43 on Friday. For the weekend, sunny days, high each day around 45. You're listening to WHYY-FM. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's take a music break with keyboardist Patrick O'Hearn. This is Crossing the Divide. We'll be right back. That's Patrick O'Hearn on an array of keyboards, percussion, and bass from his CD, Metaphor. He was joined by guitarist David Torn. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on pledge-free Y-Stream.
Art and Theater Company supports WHYY and presents Funny Man by Philadelphia playwright Bruce Graham. Set in 1959, Funny Man tells the story of an aging vaudevillian comic who is faced with a chance to revive his failing career and find new relevance. From Barrymore award-winning playwright Bruce Graham comes this new play about a man whose legacy is on the line and for whom comedy is serious business. Funny Man is on stage now through March 6th. For tickets, 215-922-1122 or artandtheater.org. In Philadelphia, everyone is reading Cold Mountain by Charles Frazier. The Free Library of Philadelphia's One Book, One Philadelphia program kicks off 8 inspired weeks of programming on February 2nd at 7:30 p.m. at the Parkway Central Library with a discussion between featured author Charles Frazier and Cold Mountain opera composer Jennifer Higdon, followed by musical performances from Opera Philadelphia and the Curtis Institute of Music. Details at freelibrary.org/onebook. The Free Library proudly supports WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Ever wonder what happens to the teachers, administrators, the whole universe of people who work at a large urban high school when it closes down permanently? Exit Strategy, a play being staged at the Suzanne Roberts Theater, explores the range of emotions that go into trying to save a school against all circumstances. As WHYY's Elizabeth Perez-Luna reports, oddly, unpredictability dominates this all-too-familiar story.
There's nothing ha-ha funny about a high school shutting down. But humor, bittersweet humor, permeates Exit Strategy, says Michael Cullen, who portrays a weathered English teacher.
The humor comes from the absurdity of their situation. It causes a lot of tension. Having a job that you've prepared for and not being allowed really to do the job. Because, you know, you don't have the books, you don't have the room, you don't have heat in the building. There are rats running around everywhere, the food's bad. I mean, it's ugly, but it's also very funny.
22 years listening to the crap that comes out of kids' mouths. 23 years, and still, whenever I hear something that, you know, just grits my gear, I gotta say, let's look at that, let's examine that. I mean, slang's one thing, sure, but completely rearranging the English language so that you can lie to me, well then, I gotta
They're
say something, that's
school.
When...
They're closing the school, the end of the year, low test scores, unfavorable conditions, lots of stuff. There is no way around it.
Playwright Ike Holter uses surprise and unexpected twists and turns to provoke a deeper inquiry into social conflicts.
It's over.
That's it.
The tricky thing about a piece like this is twisting the audience's idea of what they think they're going to get, whether that be characters, whether that be plot or theme. Yeah, you just need to keep them guessing because you don't want to play purely with heroes and villains with a topic like this. You want everyone to kind of have a full spectrum.
Tigers hear us, don't come near us. We are tigers through and through.
Because tigers do what tigers do. They stand so tall, the chosen few. And through it all, they never fall. They waste them all with wherewithal. Don't make us suck. We never do. We never do. We never do. Tigers hear us, tigers hear us.
Most of the characters are teachers, old and new, plus a young, inexperienced assistant principal. There's only one student, a senior, played by Brandon Pierce, who is reprimanded for trying to attract attention to the school's plight by hacking the school's website. He's about to graduate, and the journey, he reminds us, was never easy in this atmosphere of scarcity.
Every day, you had to go to the teacher's desk and ask for a piece of toilet paper just so you could go to the bathroom and take a bleep. And that line, to me, is horrifying.
The playwright's precise and fast-paced language brings the stories to life, says director Kip Fagan.
It sings. It comes off the page in a way that, just like when you're in a crowd of people and you're really just listening for the sound of the language, you're not listening for the content of the language, you can hear a kind of music arrive in a crowded room.
You don't want people thinking that we're like an actual thing?
No.
Be nice.
Okay, I didn't mean that we weren't an actual thing.
So what you meant?
I don't know what I meant! I had two meetings today, I had to break up a fight, and I had to make the morning announcements because I had to fire the gym teacher.
This quick pace is also risky, says Ike Holter.
And it's entertaining for me, and it's also scary because people talk themselves into corners in this play. They talk themselves into confrontations. You know, a scene can start very funny, and 2 minutes later, somebody slips up because they don't stop speaking when they should have.
In the play, each character develops an exit strategy, a way out. Some are drastic, some resigned, but they're often hopeful and courageous, never indifferent.
It's about figuring out what you're going to do when you're pushed to the limit. You know what I mean? Some people fight back and they fight on. Even if they fail, they feel good about that. Some people would rather stay back and let someone else fight for them. So this play was about looking at when people choose to fight or when they choose to let something go.
Cristina Nieves, who plays a teacher, has a favorite line about that.
Towards the end of the play, my character says, "You fight and you fight. We don't beg." That encapsulates the complicated nature of when you're going up against a system or an injustice, that you fight as hard as you can, but you also have to find a way to maintain your dignity and your self-respect.
This school works.
Esta escuela sí funciona.
Exit Strategy runs at the Suzanne Roberts Theater on Broad Street until the end of February. For many, it's an example of the old saying, comedy is a way of being serious. Elizabeth Perez Luna, WHYY News.
Finally this evening, hundreds gathered in Philadelphia today to celebrate a new stamp with the image of Bishop Richard Allen, a former slave on a Delaware plantation who went on to found the African Methodist Episcopal Church in the early 1800s. Allen founded the AME Church after leaving another congregation where his black parishioners were forced to worship in a separate area from whites. He was one of the country's first civil rights leaders. Jackie Dutpont Walker is director of social action for AME International and led the campaign to get Allen's image on a forever stamp. She says his story is not well known by many Americans.
And for all we knew about Richard Allen, we did not know the important things that would inspire my generation, my kids, and my grandkids. It's important for us to preserve that, having been written out of history, to correct that record now.
The stamp was dedicated today at the church Allen founded, Mother Bethel at 6th and Lombard Streets in Philadelphia, with speakers and music. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Customer rewards programs are everywhere today, and now some enterprising towns in New Jersey are setting up a plan for residents to earn credits toward their property taxes. We'll learn how they're going to do it on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
People's Light presents Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility, February 10th through March 20th. Full of passion, wit, and soaring emotions, the penniless Dashwood sisters pursue life and love in their own distinctive ways. Eleanor is smart and down-to-earth, while Marianne is wildly romantic. They each attract suitors whose startling secrets obstruct the path to happily ever after. For tickets, peopleslight.org or 610-644-3500. People's Light supports WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Google, presenting a workshop on how to get your business online, Wednesday, February 3rd, from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the Kimmel Center for the Performing Arts, Philadelphia, gybo.com/events/Philadelphia.
Supporting WHYY, the makers of World's Best Cat Litter, offering 6 pet, people, and planet-friendly formulas made from concentrated, naturally absorbent corn. More at discoverworldsbest.com.
Get more of the shows you love with our newest member benefit. WHYY Passport gives you extended access to an on-demand library of quality programming, bringing you your favorite shows through our web video player or any PBS app, anytime, anywhere. Catch PBS classics and all your local favorites with this exclusive WHYY member benefit. To get started with WHYY Passport, visit whyy.org/passport.